Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Another Monday, but the same Edwin. Hi Edwin, how are you going?
I'm doing okay, Martin, but the rest of the world seems to continue, you know, in that spin of turmoil, and the weather absolutely, I think, is a reflection of where we're all at the moment with the economy, the people's minds, people's perception of the future. It's dreary, it's overcast, the sun tries to poke its head out from time to time, and then bam, another storm. It just seems to be reflecting how the mood of the economy and people's mood at the moment.
Well, I tell you what, I have been out twice walking the dogs today. In each case, I had my own personal rain cloud, right? So the sun was shining over there. But where I was walking, it was raining. So I have this theory, the world's against me. I've got my own personal rain cloud.
But we do have solutions, Martin. We do have solutions from the powers to be. The greatest nation in the world has told us, and look, this is straight down your alley. You could turn things around. If you're mad at the world, if you're mad at the people, if you're mad at life, go out and do some kickboxing, Martin, and start drinking some margaritas.
Kickboxing and margaritas, that's your recipe, is it?
No, not mine. That's the press secretary's recipe. That's the from the higher up. From the world's greatest and best economy. And but look, I've got a bit of thing to say about that. I'm not one for margaritas, but 43 or 43 is the drink of choice. Or Don Julio, tequila. Go with that. Stuff the margarita stuff. If you really want to get into it, get into the 43 and the Don Julio.
I tell you what, I have discovered sparkling water, right? So I've now got one of these soda stream things, right, where you sort of squirt bubbles into tap water. It's brilliant. It's a lot cheaper than buying fizzy water down the road.
Yeah, well, I thought you were going to tell me you were sniffing the little canisters.
No.
America seems to be going down into that downward spiral, and it seems like those clouds are very ominous over those dark clouds are very ominous over their economy and what's going on there. But look, on the bright side, our commentators are saying that we're drinking less. I doubt it, but they're saying that we're actually. But then again, they're saying that we're drinking less in by way of cocktails. That's the AFR, But I think we're really getting into the beers. Every tradesperson I talk to, or every other person in the real estate industry that I talk to, they're either drinking or getting over a hangover.
Yes, well, your question is, do you believe the statistics, right? And does it tell you the full story? And by the way, those questions you could apply to CPI, you could apply it to employment, you could, pretty much wherever you look, right? It amazes me how sometimes these statistics are carefully presented in a particular way to give a particular spin, but doesn't that tell you much at all?
No, look, it doesn't. But look, with as we're talking about the weather and the rain and so forth, looking at thinking about the property market, the arena, and what the obviously what the rant is for tonight, and trying to stay on topic, is I've been thinking very deeply about what's happening with all those basement car parks in Parramatta, in the low-lying areas of Waterloo and other parts of Sydney, where you got these monstrosities, and they decided to go 15, 20 metres further down that below the level that they should have dug. In other words, added another one or two or even three basements. That would be really interesting to see what's happening in these high-rise developments. And the other thing is all those backfill areas that we've discussed over the years, like you've got your Jordan Springs, some parts of Moorbank that are the old foul plough site at Moorbank near Bankstown Airport there, and all these areas where they've just backfilled and they've got all these issues. With all this, the amount of rain, it's got to be having an effect on buildings that have already established endos that are being constructed, and then I guess you know then we'll have a very lengthy time of drought or you know no rain, and then the ground will shrink, and then again the construction will be tested once more.
Absolutely, yes. Well, the other big question for me is I wonder how many of those sub-basement pumping systems are up to it, right? And, of course, it's worth recalling that one of the risks of sub-basement pumping systems is all the silt getting into the pumps, right? So just when you want them, sometimes they decide to go on strike.
That's right. And there are some of these electrical pumps can't cope. I know a couple of developments in Parramatta, new developments in Parramatta that you know the local LGA are involved with, or were involved with, they still are to an extent, and because they dug one basement further down, the electrical pumps couldn't can't cope. The only alternative is is diesel pumps, but you can't obviously you can't put diesel or combustion pumps. In basements, because then you've got other issues. So look, it's a can of worms we're going to be hearing more and more throughout this year as these rains continue, and if this weather continues throughout the year with these ongoing rains. I don't mind the rain, I don't mind the cold, but you can only deal with so much of it. It's just I can't finish the sardine pond, the koi pond, but I can't waterproof it because every time I drain it and get it ready, it starts raining again. So Dusty and Evan are not in a good mood with me at the moment.
No, well, and I've always said that at least what you could do in those deep basements is to just put it down to a swimming pool, right? Basement swimming pool drive-in swimming pool. There you go. That's the way to solve that one.
Look, or two in one: swimming pool, in-ground swimming pool, and car wash.
I love it. Now, of course, one of the interesting things, we'll get the inflation numbers out this week, right? Australian inflation numbers. And I've been reading what people have been saying, and some people are saying, oh, it'll be a big number. Others will say, oh, it won't be too bad, right? My suspicion is it'll be quite a big number. But interestingly, the AFR managed to find a silver lining to the inflation story.
Yeah, if you're talking about the fact that the big retailers are going to control the inflation, particularly around food, that's I'd like to see that. The only thing that I can see happening is the main retailers are just controlling the prices. They're going to control the prices moving forward. The smaller players are obviously put out of business. But don't forget, remember what our WeChat chatters told us a while ago, Martin, with regards to the costs and the demands that the big retailers were putting on them with regards to packaging, costs of you've got your fertilizer, you've got your labor costs, and with this Omicron now, with the issues around labor and consistent labor, and trying to protect or insulate their farms and orchards from the Omicron and any issues and effects that would have. So we already know about it, but for the government to say that the main retailers are going to be somewhat supportive and controlling, I think the only thing that they're going to control is prices going up and how much we have to pay and how much we're going to be allowed to buy moving forward.
Absolutely. It'll be very interesting. And I noticed that there were a few more products on the shelves at my local supermarket when I went there, but still quite a few holes. But one thing is quite clear, prices of things are continuing to rise.
And putting more pressure on the young people or the newcomers into the property arena, in the local newcomers into the property arena, those that have just bought recently, or have overpaid, and they got high LVRs. Let's be clear on that. I think they're the ones that are going to have issues. The ones that come in with high LVRs, and I'm talking about anything upwards of 85% LVRs, 90% LVRs, regardless of the subsidies that the government have given them, or they may be sitting back and saying that, oh yeah, the government's not going to call their loan on us or whatever. They're going to have issues. And the other thing is, do you really want a house Do you really want a house? And this is where the government, is retrospective or looking at the rear vision mirror in order to solve the housing problems of that the Aussie battlers, the Aussie young families and families face. And that is that, people have got to are making choices, and unfortunately, a lot are making the wrong choices, and that is taking a regular staple diet and a regular diet away from their families, just so they can pay down the mortgages and so they can keep up with the mortgages. The cost of living is going up. The cost of maintaining the homes and God forbid if they bought apartments, are rising, and materials are rising, and maintaining these old derelict homes, it's just getting unbelievably more and more expensive, and materials harder to find. So there's all those added costs. Well, you've got to take it away from from the table, from the food table. So it's these choices, unfortunately, that people are making are forced upon them by the lax or the retrospective view that the government have on giving our citizens, our brothers and sisters, a good place and a home to live.
Yeah, but you see, we're going to see the Barnaby Joyce card played again. Barnaby came out today and said, there's no problem getting rats. The problem is everybody hoarding them, right? So the government's now trying to blame, the consumers and households for their problems once again. And I see this again and again and again, right? So whenever anything starts going wrong, the government tries to find an excuse and tries to push the blame on somebody else, consumers or states or whatever. They don't want to own any of the major issues that clearly they're responsible for.
Well, that's right. And they've basically made shopping dangerous. It's very, very dangerous to go out to go shopping these days, Martin. I've got to fight tooth and nail for certain goods. And the unfortunate thing is I've got to beat little old ladies, with their own walking stick in order to be able to get the my sardines and Dusty's and Evan's canned food. It's not that bad, and I'm not that vicious, but it's becoming a dangerous sport, but not as dangerous as tennis, Martin. Tennis is becoming more and more dangerous by the week, and look at what's happening now with the mining rights that Rio Tinto thought they had and thought they were going to get, and all of a sudden there are $5 billion in the red because of decisions certain governments have made, and certain state governments made, and certain sporting events have made, whatever the case may be. But it's all I can say is that tennis is becoming more dangerous than shopping.
Yeah, absolutely. A $5 billion loss thanks to a tennis result, or a tennis non-result, I suppose.
Yeah, and in regards to that, I just keep on thinking how dangerous it's becoming, because people go missing. Women tennis players are going missing. All sorts of issues. Tennis is just very dangerous. I'm keeping away from tennis, and I'm not letting Dusty and Evan grab a racket. I told them if they want to play a sport, go getting the kickboxing, drinking tequilas, or golf. One of the three. No, tennis does not come into the mix.
Well, let me just pick up the issue of shopping is dangerous, right? A few years ago, my wife Jill was over in Perth, and she noted that in one of the bargain supermarkets over here, they got some bundles of towels on special, right? So I had very strict instructions to turn up at this shop precisely on opening time and go and buy four bundles of towels, right? And so there I was. And then I realised that at 9:01, people came from all directions, right? And the door opened, and it was like they were tearing each other's throats apart trying to get these bundles of towels. I've never seen anything so raw in my life, right? Just for towels. So I'm of the view that retail shopping is definitely for the not for the faint-hearted, and boy, it can be a dangerous sport.
Look, it is. I think they should introduce that at the Beijing Olympics, as a teaser. Who knows? We could. I think Australian shoppers will do well. I think we'll always be up there with America, you know, in you know, winning the gold. I'm convinced, absolutely convinced, especially if you put toilet paper rolls as one of the prime, you know, prime items that you need to get. You know, there are some people in the Parramatta and in Kempsey that are very good at it, you know. And look, the other thing is, you know, you can be of all shapes and sizes. You don't have to be a health fanatic to get into that that sport.
Well, I can tell you that some of the most violent participants were rather elderly and overweight women who were using their weight to great advantage, right? And I'm a poor little wee thing, and I nearly got crushed in the crushed in the action. So I came away with 2 out of 4, and Jill was not impressed, and she called me a wimp.
Yeah, look, we laugh about all these things, but looking at it, you know, in the greater scheme of things, it's a reflection of how the governments, you know, local, state, and federal governments have just ran the whole economy and ran. Again, we go back to what we're going to be discussing or we're talking about tonight, and that's a property rant, and how it has repercussions on prices of homes and apartments and any other you know, places of that are livable. I'm not talking about the dog boxes that are being sold, but we're talking about good homes that can sustain a growing family. It's and look, we could end up with with another 2021 if numbers on market don't come on as readily as we would like them to. We talk a little bit more about numbers, but it's definitely an effect, and all this, everything else around it, around the numbers, everything else the government is doing is obviously having an effect on what people are doing, how people are perceiving how the government's going to be moving forward. Obviously, the fear mongering that's going on, all the other concerns and issues that the governments aren't resolving, but rather pushing the can further down the road and pushing the problems further down the road, in a hope and prayer that, you know, if they get another term in power, they may be able to resolve it, or they can hoodwink us into making all sorts of promises. You know, it's just really, really farcical. But again, that imagery of people shopping for goods and going all out and bashing each other, it's what the mainstream media are now commenting with regards to the rental arena in some areas when they look people are making those lifestyle changes into homes or dwellings that'll give their young families some room to some space to live, as opposed to the dog boxes that have been built over the last decade and a half. You know, and it's almost a reflection of that, Martin, and it's sad to see. We jest about it, we joke a little bit about it, but you know, we're watching it in real time, and I feel for the younger people or for the first time homeowners that are looking to come in, because things potentially could get worse for them with regards to freestanding homes and the like.
Absolutely, yes. It really does writ large, I think, on some of the social dynamics that we're seeing, and it's not good, you know. A little bit of respect, a little bit of good manners would go a long way. But talking about good manners, of course, WeChat has shown some very bad manners with regards to our Prime Minister's WeChat account. Although the question I've got for you, Evan, is did he have the right sort of WeChat account in the first place?
No, look, they don't. Anybody that's... anybody that has a WeChat account here in Australia, we're limited to what we can see. You've got to have other sources, internal sources that with their WeChat accounts that you're able to see their what they stream through their through the Tencent platform and so forth. But look, WeChat is not like Twitter as such. WeChat is a platform that you create groups and you share information amongst groups. It's somewhat different, but it's really interesting. But look, rumor has it amongst the WeChat chatters and the rumor or the conspiracies that are being thrown around is because basically they want to limit, and potentially anybody that has a WeChat account here in Australia potentially could be censored or could be closed off, or be denied access to to a lot because of the tension that's happening in the South China Sea. So if anything should happen, God forbid, obviously they want to censor and they want to block any type of information coming through that platform that would otherwise notify us, the greater populace, as to what's really going on. Because I mean, between the superpowers, they're playing these silly games down there and teasing each other, going into into each other's territories and doing all sorts of shenanigans, because obviously they can, and there's real disregard for the for the rest of the world. But all that aside, it is interesting as to the to it happening to our Prime Minister and what's being noted. But I think what we need to do, Martin, is concentrate on the side that obviously our WeChat chatterers share with us, because that is relevant information. It's information ahead of time, and it's not the diluted information that you would see through a lot of the local WeChat accounts here. So and that's where you go back to as to whether or not he had the right one. He'd be very, very limited, and there's a lot happening now with regards to how China is moving and what they're preparing for.
Yes, and I think it is worth reflecting on two points there. The first is that WeChat is not the same as Twitter, although a lot of Western people think it is the same. It's not, right? And the second is that the real vibe of what's going on is not the ones outside. It's on the mainland, right? And there are some really disturbing messages coming through, it seems to me.
Look, it is, well, do we call it disturbing messages in terms of really what we've been sharing to our audience for over 12 months, and that is what the messages that the government have been telling their people, and that is to really prepare for two things, famine and war. We also found out over the weekend that China has increased its 10-year average of stockpiling in with regards to corn, and other food items. It's in some cases on average by 20% of the 10-year average. So wheat and all these things that are essential. So they've been preparing, and they've been preparing the people for effectively what we are looking at now. We've got this issue with Russia. We've got this other issue in the South China Sea as well, potentially, and we've got Omicron going absolutely crazy globally, and now WeChat are also talking about further issues with another variant that's working somewhat in stealth, that's just as infectious as Omicron, and who knows as to how badly it would affect the individuals if they catch it. So it's all these things that they've been preparing for. So one would have to ask the question is that, yes, some of the messaging is very ominous and very, one could perceive it as being very ominous and very alarming. But on the other hand, it's a form of communication to the greater population of China to really prepare. Let's not forget, there's over 1.3 billion people there that they've got to basically prepare for any forthcoming war or issues that they may be facing in the near future.
Yeah, and that is the point, isn't it? So that we must think about this predominantly as an audience which is internal to China, right? And it gives you perhaps some quite a good flavour as to what people are thinking. And the fact, things like the recent changes to student access from China, for example, right, seems to have been very badly received.
Look, it is, and this is interesting. Here we make a big song and dance about it, and obviously it's for the messaging of pushing the high-rise developments and the off the plan apartments. Because why? Let's not forget, off the plan construction. If a developer got a permit to start your construction certificate, and they were able to start building, say tomorrow, the project's not going to be finished for another 24 months, all going well. And depending on the height of the building as well, and all the earthworks that are required, but see, this is what a lot of people don't understand, is that on or within 3 months of you purchasing an off the plan apartment, you have to pay the stamp duty. And that's what keeps the the governments ticking along is the stamp duty. You don't pay the stamp duty at the end. You know, typically on a normal transaction, you basically make allocate stamp duty and everything, because settlements are usually just 6 weeks. But when you're buying something with a delayed settlement or a long settlement period, you know, the rules are in New South Wales anyway that on or before 3 months. When purchasing off the plan or something that's under construction, you have to pay that stamp duty. So regardless of whether it takes 12 months, 18 months, 24 months to finish the construction and for you to settle, the government have got their ticket. They've got their clip of the ticket and they're moving on, basically. So they've got to push that, because that's what gives them, you could say that cash flow, which makes, I believe, 18% of the of the funds to run the stage. So it's not a small token. It's rather a sizable amount of money that the government's made. So they've got to push that narrative in order to keep that machine ticking away. Now, so the mainstream push that, and how wonderful it is for the government to basically, subsidise $620 or $630, for the of the applicant's visa and that. But the WeChat chatterers over in China, or the mainstream over in China, and the social media commentators over in China, through the platforms that we monitor, that our team monitors, they're saying otherwise. They're basically saying, well, yeah, stick it. Yeah, what's $620 going to do? You want us to basically pay $40,000 a year for a degree, and you're going to have us locked up in an apartment that we're paying rent on anyway? And we don't have face-to-face tuition, or you lock us down, or we can't move around. And let's not forget, we're dealing with young people that, albeit that they are becoming more and more informed, and they do like their they're moving away from this long-term view of a family unit and getting married and living happily ever after and having kids, and then buying a principal place of residence and the like. The majority of the chat are there in China at the moment. This is what the government is having huge problems with, is the fact that the majority of the young people that are in that age group that should be getting married, they're saying, well, you know what, stuff you, we're not getting married because it's too expensive, and marriage demands that we also have to buy a home, and we can't do it. There's no work future, there's no potential, that they don't see a big uptick in a work future and so forth. So that's the economic state, and that's the economic state of the young people's mind over there. So they're working against all this, and they're looking at coming over to Australia to be locked down, to be impeded in the movements and in the social life. They're saying, you know what? In all honesty, Martin, what they're saying is we have better liberties here in China than what we perceive to have, we would have in Australia, let alone in Victoria.
Absolutely. Well, it's very interesting to compare one with the other. But of course, the other issue is that the economic story in China is not particularly positive at the moment, right? So we're starting to see some repossessions. We're starting to see some further cracks breaking in the property sector. I know that Evergrande announced two more people trying to help them with some reconstruction and things and restructuring of the board over the last 24 hours, and that moved the share price up a little. But the property sector in in China is still looking pretty wobbly, and more repossessions probably ahead.
Well, that's right. And what a lot of mainstream media don't see here, or we don't read about in the Western world, is the fact that there's already a lot of repossessions going on in the second tier cities. The focus with Zero Hedge and a lot of the other commentators with regard to China and the like, and Bloomberg and so forth, the focus is on the first tier cities. But there's already a lot of repossessions and mortgage impossessions moving ahead, and it's only going to get worse. And that's the chatter that we're hearing. Now, how does that affect us, Martin? Well, it affects us a great deal, because this is what we've been saying from the beginning of this year, and that is keep your eye on the apartment market, properties listed for sale in the apartment sector, because a lot of the middle class are the ones that are being affected in mainland China. And this is what you don't hear from our mainstream media. This is what you don't see or hear from anybody that's got WeChat here, or Morrison would get on his feet, because you've got to create the networks in order to get the information anyway. So yeah, they wouldn't get all this information. So what we're listening to, what we're hearing, what we're reading is that there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of financial stress there. A lot of, I mean, let's face it. I think it's common knowledge, or maybe you know about it. You know, Russia selling its American bonds, but yet China's buying them. Why? Because they feel that the yuan is going to be devalued towards the middle and moving forward towards the end of the year. So they want to hedge themselves with regards to that and make sure that they've got US dollars in place in order to keep on stockpiling the food that they need, the wheat, the rice, and the and the corn, in order to sustain the population. So if they see a deflationary position on the yuan, and the sentiment there is one that is not very positive, well, it's the WeChat chatterers and the mainstream narrative over there are already saying, and they're already seeing that these are the reporters and the commentators on economics and property. They're already saying, and they're already having showing evidence of investors from mainland China into parts places like Sydney, New Zealand, Canada, and so forth. They're already starting to offload their apartments because they can see that they're of no value, and they're better off with that money in mainland China than they are in overseas. So it's, and we don't need a lot of properties on market to, as you know, as we've spoken about many a time, in order to send this market into a tailspin, into a downward tailspin, or obviously the other way. When you take 1,000 off market, and all of a sudden people start going crazy, and it's like the people trying to shop for those tails that you were talking about.
Absolutely. Oh, shivers to my mind as I think about it. and interestingly, the local Chinese chatter, right, which is still worth thinking about, although we've sort of said that the main action is up in China. But there are some rather important messages coming locally as well, aren't there?
Well, there are. And this is just a tag along from what we shared before. And that is the Chinese communities, the Chinese groups that have got small farms, your 5-acre lots, your 10-acre lots, your 12-acre lots around Badgerys Creek, and in and around the Sydney Basin. It's it's too costly now. It's too costly, and it's continuing to be more and more costly, and it's only going to get more and more expensive, especially with there's been an upsurge of that chatter with regard to the Omicron, and those farms that you were able to go and pick your own strawberries, or pick your own fruit and pick your own veggies or whatever, and whatever you picked in your basket, then you paid for it and you took it home. Well, guess what? A lot of these people aren't allowing people to go on there. That is close to the general public, because they want to control what happens internally, because they can't afford to have the cron running rampant through their small farms, because that's their livelihood. But all that's done is made the individual owners decide to basically either sell to developers or change the business model, which is basically to flatten everything down and build warehousing for storage and rent it out, because then there's no issues with overheads in terms of packaging. There's no shortages of materials or chain supply issues for packaging, and they can basically tell Coles and Woolworths to go stick it up with the demands that they're putting on these small farmers. So that's one of the interesting things. So obviously, we've got that. That's going to affect people's decisions, as we said, and people's choices as to what they buy, and people's preparedness to venture further out west, further out north, further out southwest, in order to own a bit of land to prepare for what's coming up in the future. The other thing that's happening with the local Chinese chatter is obviously they're the high net worth individuals that local high net worth individuals that have been buying gold bars and palladium. It's just one of those one of those things. They're basically. But then again, this is something that we shared with our viewers previously, that they're making a change in the investment asset class to owning a takeaway shop, owning off the plan apartments or apartments and the like, dumping them and moving into other asset classes. So again, to me, this puts more onus on more pressure, more downward pressure on apartment values, and more because we will see, and I'm convinced that we will see anywhere between 30 and 40% rise in listing numbers with regards to apartments on market in Sydney. I don't know of any other city, but in Sydney, I can really see it ticking back up to potentially 2018 numbers, and that was closer to 14,000-15,000 as opposed to the 8,000 on average that we've had for the last 3 years.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of evidence. Again, I'm seeing it from my surveys, I'm seeing it from my individual conversations with people, that there is a sort of a ripple of fear amongst a lot of apartment holders who now think that the market is definitely beginning to topple, and that they're really quite desperate now to try and get out with some degree of respectability. So I do expect too that to see the number of listings continue to rise, and of course as listings rise, prices continue to go the other way. And I'm still seeing in my data considerable price falls and people willing to settle prior to auction, often at significantly lower values than they were previously. So I do think those sectors of the market are really turning. And I don't believe the mainstream when they say, well, suddenly there's a massive boom of demand and higher rents in the central CBDs of Sydney and Melbourne. I'm not seeing it in my data yet. So it seems to be more of the same old, higher listings numbers, lower prices. I think we're going to see that over the next few months.
That's right, and I believe so, Martin. And I mean, to try and persuade 150,000 potential students to come into Australia, into the to take a position in the tertiary education faculty, with a $630 rebate on their visa, I mean, it's farcical. But they'll try. And they'll try to pump it, and they'll try to try to slow down the foreseeable carnage with regards to apartments. But look, the saving grace to a lot of apartments, to some apartments, is obviously going to be buying at the right price now, buying in the right buildings and in the location that is going to be always attractive, and that's typically of for lifestyle that people are looking for, and it's either because of that they've got a school that's nearby that's in demand, and they need that address in order to get the children off to that school. It's in the school catchment area. It's in an area that it's not a complex that has major defects with construction. So in a way, that's going to buffer some of the price losses. But unfortunately, it just comes back to, if we do see the 30, let's say we see 20% increase in listing numbers for apartments on market. Look, that's going to be reflective of the price value drops. In my opinion, it's going to be on par with how many more apartments we see on market, as to how low the prices will drop for the apartment sector. Let's keep in mind again, and let's bring it to the nuts and bolts. Let's bring it to where the rubber meets the road. On average, we're seeing under 8,000 over the last 3 years, under 8,000 apartments listed on market for sale. It's basically the market's being drip-fed when it comes to apartments, when typically in 2018 and all the way back to 2015, the average of apartments on market, Martin, were closer to, closer to 17,000. So that gives you an indication of where we really are. But anything above 8,000 now, it's just it just hold your breath and let's see how far the owners can ride this wave down.
Yes, and remember also this, Edwin, that there are still more new apartment construction programs underway. So supply is continuing to be built at the time when effectively the stock of existing property for sale is rising. Road traffic accident, welcome.
it really is. Yeah, I mean, that whole imagery, Martin, of in this case, it's going to be a running for the exit, where all that stockpile, that carnage, is going to happen, as opposed to running to grab a towel. But look, the numbers on market for freestanding homes, on the other hand, they have to go up. They have to go up in order to for us not to have a recap of what happened in 2021 and this whole Omicron fear and God knows whatever else they're going to throw at us moving forward in order to shut the doors. It's taking a lot of listings off market when it comes to principal places residents, because let's not forget the majority of the homes on market are for owner occupiers. It's not investment properties. It's a lot of owner occupiers. The majority of our owner occupiers. On the other hand, the majority of apartments for sale are investment properties, and a lot of them are vacant, albeit staged, but they are vacant. So yeah, that's the difference. So you don't want people trampling through your place of residence when all this fear and everything else, and agents don't have a proper working policy in order how to control groups of people going through the homes. It's just basically throw them all in, get all in there, get over and done with, so I can get to my next open, or I can I can finish off early on a Saturday midday, so as I can go and start drinking, whatever the case may be. So there has to be a lot of change has to happen, but I'm keeping a very close eye on both sectors. The freestanding homes on market, and also apartments, because it's obviously monitoring those two sides, so as we can report to our audience, because obviously our audience is interested in both sides of the of that housing coin.
Absolutely. Well, here's another question for you, right? When does a bidder bid against themselves?
When they give the paddle to the 2-year-old that they got in their arm, I guess, and the little kid just throws it up in the air, and they're kind of throwing in an extra $50,000 bid. I mean, how crazy is that, Martin? How crazy is that? And to top it off, the auctioneer, according to the article, the auctioneer alluded to the fact that that it was a bid that was took him, took him by surprise, in the commentary that he made, along those lines, and wasn't that enough to keep the bidder to hold, albeit okay, you've made that bid, you're gonna own the property, but to then not to have any other bid against you. It doesn't tell us how much time they stayed on that bid, or how long the agent was calling for others to step in, or what shenanigans and they were telling the public at the time, like saying that there's a number of umpteen bidders registered, blah blah blah. But when you read the story and you find out the history and how it unfolded on the day, there was only one bidder. Mm. And then they got pushed to go from 950 to a million, an extra 50. But I've seen it before. I've seen some stand their ground. Good on them. I saw one at Lane Cove a year and a half ago, and it's stood the ground for somewhat. He did come in with a second bid, bid against himself, but it was only $20,000 more on his original bid. He was a bit shy of the mark. And then he stood his ground and basically told the auctioneer, why should I bid against myself? There's nobody else jumping in. And you've got to have those conversations with the auctioneer. A lot of people think that you don't have conversations with the auctioneer, or you're not allowed to speak, or you're not allowed to ask questions. You can do whatever you damn well like. It's all, it's all fair in love and in property auctions, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that's important, right? Because I've noticed on some occasions, and maybe it's people because they're not really comfortable with auctions, they don't do enough of them, right? But they're almost sort of holding the auctioneer's words in holy reverence, right? Rather than actually pushing back and dictating more of the action. And the point is that it is a set of interactions where you, as a prospective bidder, has as much a stake and influence as anybody else to dictate the way things go.
Yeah, look. The thing is, we sometimes get, obviously, we get some inside information. We know what's going on because the relationship that we have with certain agents, and we're able to, you know, to gauge and see where, you know, and coordinate with our clients as to how far we really are prepared to go based on the information that we gather. And it's information gathering process. It is, as I keep on saying, I can't teach people how to do it. I can only share certain things, you're going to learn by experience. But, you know, in my experience, you know, the best thing that one can do is really get the auctioneer to engage with you. That's what you're trying to do in order to slow things down. And that in a lot of the cases, you know, 8 times out of 10, that is my premise, is to slow it down. The more you can slow it down, the more shine you can take away, you know, or the more you can take away from all their emotional, stuff that surrounds, auctions. So it's something that, look, I got roused on about 3 weeks before Christmas at an auction. You know, the agent, I asked them a question. I was first cab off the rank. I was low. I knew I was low, and he was very, very low. But I wanted to get his attention, and I got it. And then he made a remark, and I bounced back, and I said, "Bro, happy to give you more if you deal with this, and that in the building." And then he roused at me, and he said, "Oh, it's not up to you to dictate this, that, and the other." And I said, "Really? Why? Why? I'm asking a question. Why can't I ask a question?" And that, in a way, destabilizes the whole process. That, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a strategy. Look, I love what Mike Tyson said. Everybody has a game plan until you get punched in the nose. My punch in the nose was when the four other developers came in, you know, a lot higher than me, and that I got really punched in the face then. Because there's certain things that you just can't help. There's just certain things that you've got no control of. You've got no control over somebody else's stupidity. You've got no control over somebody else's ignorance. You've got no control over somebody else's easy money that they're getting from overseas or whatever. They're things outside of your control. But you try to control things to a point that you're going to be feel confident, if you feel at peace, that you're going to walk away from that whole process, and knowing that you tried your best, and quite frankly, why go above your means anyway? And that's something that a lot of people have this fear of, and they get caught up, with auctions and the emotion, and as you said, the agents dictating what they should be paying and bidding and upping the ante on and so forth. You know, a dollar above an offer, if it's somebody else's, is higher than it's higher than the previous offer. And over and over again, I see these arguments. You know, or I see the auctioneers pushing for those $50,000 increments or $25,000 increments or, you know, $10,000 increments, and people fall for it, you know, push harder. They should be pushing harder on the lower side of the increments that they want to do, in order, because at the end of the day, it's very adversarial. It's very tactful, and you're only told or you're listening to what they want you to listen, and people think they are the authority. But quite frankly, they're not.
No, so tactics are really important, right? Because it's a tactical battle. And as I sometimes say to people, well, you can always go up a little higher, but once you've gone up, you're stuck, right? So take the stairs, not the escalator.
No, I like that. Exactly, yeah. Take the stairs, not the escalator. I like that. I'm going to tweet it out.
handy tip for the day. Now, the second article, you confused me here, because you basically said, I got two, right? So which one are we going for?
Well, look, I did want to go. It was a toss between Tarek's article on news.com with how the Omicron, how you saw the Omicron affecting the housing prices and moving forward. He opens up a great debate, great arguments, and thus this contribution that was very welcome. But although he said it was my contribution, he should have put, Dusty was very upset when she read the article. She said, "Hey, that was my idea. That were my ideas." Anyway, we settled all that. Yeah, so it was a good article, but I'd guess that you're going to be talking a little bit more with Tarek on Fridays with regard to that. So I left that, but it was a toss-up between that and obviously our cousins over in New Zealand. The article with regards to Aucklanders eyeing, what's the area there? Coromandel.
Coromandel, yep.
Properties. And to me, that was a reflection of what's been happening here and what people have been doing. And it's the lifestyle change. It just sort of, it caught my eye, caught my attention because it really, it spoke about what's basically happening here and will continue to happen here if, as more and more we have these issues in these commercial hubs, where people are basically finding it harder and harder to get by. And not necessarily, Martin, and I guess I've got to say, it's not necessarily fear of the crime. It's more to the point, it's just fear of getting locked down into confined spaces and confined areas. I think is a greater fear than the fear of the crime is one. And the other one is look, quite frankly, some of these people, male and female, ladies and men and ladies and so forth at shopping centers can be very ominous. And it seems to that the more as I venture into the congested areas of Sydney and the commercial hubs, look, it seems like everybody's walking around with a short fuse, and you can't look at people in a way. You can't keep eye contact anymore in certain areas, which is we've really lost a lot of that. That the communication of that level of respect, you can't keep eye contact because they look at you the wrong way, or if you're or they see you strangely. It just seems like a lot of people are running around so with a short fuse, and I guess the fear of violence we see what's happening in America as well and in other parts of the world where there's also this fear of crime because of the shortages, because of the supply chain issues, and because there's going to be less and less in the on the shelves at shops, I can only see that crime is going to continue to tick upwards. So when I was reading this article, it just made me reflect on what we've been going through and what we potentially will continue to go through, and the prices, not only in by way of prices by selling prices or buying prices of homes that have got that comfort and they've got that space and they've got that access to high speed internet so people can work from home. But also the rental markets moving further out, how much more they're gonna increase because people wanting to make these lifestyle changes. And it looks like New Zealand are finally walking into what we've been in for the last year.
Well, it's interesting because New Zealand prices actually went a lot higher than ours, and the price momentum is now coming back. But it's interesting, the New Zealand Observer just calling out 100 days of lockdowns, $120 billion in debt, right? 1 million a day to motel the homeless, 165,000 more immigrants, the highest house prices in history, the highest rents ever, the worst poverty data in generations. I mean, when you start seeing that list of features there, you say, well, actually, it's pretty worrying. And of course, the trajectory, according to the Reserve Bank in New Zealand, for house prices is considerably down, but the debt's still very high. So they've certainly got a few issues, and there's a mirroring of the issues there and the ones here. The only difference is that in New Zealand, now the Reserve Bank in New Zealand has been given specific accountability to think about house prices in the context of the monetary policy, Whereas in Australia, both the RBA and APRA say house prices, nothing to do with us at all. It's somebody else's problem. So, and of course, the government here, of course, is saying, no, it's all supply issues, nothing to do with debt or anything. So I do think that New Zealand actually has worked this further forward in terms of some of the underlying causes. But I also think they've got huge barriers ahead to try and unpick some of the things that they've done. And by the way, of course, Omicron is beginning now to spark there in New Zealand too, which is why they're basically pushing for further lockdowns. Now lockdowns have come in again. So the red, you know, the traffic light red scenario for a period of time. And all the consequences of that in people not being able to travel, people not being able to get back to New Zealand. And, you know, interesting question then. Well, who are the winners and who are the losers and how does this all play out? And you've got to say that things ain't looking pretty flash there either.
Oh, that's right. And it's a shame. And I'd, your sister-in-law is also stuck here for that same reason. She can't go back.
Exactly. Yeah, she came over to look after Jill and did a great job, but she's still here at the moment. She could still be here by June. Which is, wasn't planned, but we'll see. We'll take it one step at a time.
Longer. Exactly. But yeah, look, exactly. And the bigger question obviously is you know, who's benefiting from all this and who's who's getting the green light to buy the land where you and I've said for a while, you know, the values in the land. And when you start looking at these high net worth individuals from overseas buying into regional areas of New Zealand, but also a mirror image of what's happening here, and the WeChat chatterers have been telling us that the high net worth individuals, you know, they've been buying land not only because of this pandemic, more so because of the crime and the pandemic, but also because that they have been doing so for quite a number of years. Their focus hasn't been on off the plan apartments or apartments as such, but it's been on high value assets, which is that are basically tied up with land, and whether it be industrial or farmlands. So unfortunately, there are winners and but there are a lot more losers.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's right. And I think as this works forward, the losers will start to realise just how much they've lost. But as we come to the end of our show, we've still got room for tip of the week, and this is a doozy.
Look, we do have contact with the tribunals, and this is something that I just wanted to put out today. In talking to a senior tribunal member here in New South Wales, here in Sydney, and that's in relation to what they're seeing, an uptick of landlord claims against tenants in the in the tribunal, so in NCAT. So it's something that hope our viewers that are in the rental space or looking at renting new property, moving into a new rental. I just want to give you a couple of tips. One is when you're moving into a new property for rent, for lease, take as many photos as you can. We used to take, when we did property management from our side of things, we used to take anywhere between 200 to 400 individual photos and videos of any property that we were preparing to lease out to market for our own records. A lot of agencies don't do that. I don't know why they don't do that. It just made our life and our property manager's lives a lot easier if there were any claims or any disputes at the end of the tenancy, because you can then compare notes, and also pictures. You know, the old saying goes, a picture paints 1,000 words. So if you can do that, the reason being is there's been a huge uptick in landlords winning in a lot of cases in relation to flooring issues, carpets, and obviously carpets that are being ruined by the tenants, whether it be the occupants or even the pets, and they're winning because the tenants aren't going to the tribunal prepared, and they haven't they've relied on the ingoing inspection report that the agents given them, and a lot of it's just wording. A lot of property managers don't. You can't even read the handwriting if it's written by hand. You can't even make heads or tails of it. So do your own reporting before you move in. And the best way to do it is by individual rooms and photographing everything and any mark or any blem, you know, anything that you see on the walls and on the floor and on the along the windowsills of the dwelling. Very, very important because those claims are being awarded a lot more to owners. And the second reason why they're being awarded and tenants are being caught out is not only because they're not being prepared, look, your defense is what's called fair wear and tear. That is your defense to claims made by landlords or landlord's agents with regards to flooring or issues with paint, you know, wall markings or blinds or anything like that. Your defense is fair wear and tear. But it's often the case now that the tenants don't have anything to rely on, or they haven't put anything together or substantial. They're relying on the ingoing inspection report given to them by the agent. So it's becoming harder to defend the claim. And the claims, how can I put it? Because of the cost of materials and the cost of labor over the last 2 years have increased dramatically. What would cost to get things rectified or to get a room painted? You might have got a tradesperson to get a couple of walls painted in a room that were marked, albeit by the tenant. The tenant will say, okay, look, I did that, you know, my fault, blah, blah, blah. And you get a tradesperson there to fix it, and it would only cost you, $340. But now try to get somebody there, less than $700, $800 just to do that small repair, or because the time is more valuable, it's costing more materials and everything. So everything's gone up in value. So the cost of getting things repaired and the cost of getting things replaced is increasing, not only for people that have bought properties and they've got to do renovations, but also, unfortunately, for tenants that are going to be hit with these claims by the landlords.
No, it's very important. And I actually am always of the view that as a tenant, you should take your own photographs, right, your own record on the way in, and specifically notice any damage, right? And generally what I say to people is, if you see damage on the way in, make sure that the agent is aware that you've seen it, right? Because it amazes me quite often how the ingoing inspection that the agent does for the owner of the property seems to miss a lot of stuff that you think, well, hang on a moment, you know, you can clearly see that that's damaged, but they don't sort of put it in, right? And the problem is that once you're in there, if you're not careful, it's the word of the agent and the photographs that they took against you, unless you've got evidence.
Or photographs that were never taken. Yep. So it's their word against your word, and who puts a better claim and who puts a better defense, or who puts, the document. So that's why it's very, very, very important. And you've hit the nail on the head as well, as what I was also saying, and that is, do that report before you move in, not after you move in, because it's hard to document everything when all your furniture and everything else is in. Yes, the property manager says to you, oh, you've got 7 days to check everything and then send back or send us back your version of the ingoing inspection report, and as long as we get it within 7 days, you'll be okay. And unfortunately, people fall for that trap, and they go in there and they've got everything there, and then you it's too late. It's hard to work out whether you damaged it on the way in, or whether it was damaged on the way in, or your removalist did it, or what. It's very, very hard. So all it is, what we're saying is to avoid all that, do it before you move in. Record it, document it, and also document any calls or any issues along, during your tenancy, any call outs to tradespeople to fix things and delays, because a history of a historical report of your tenancy will help the tribunal member a great deal to see whether or not the landlord or the landlord's agent was proactive or is just trying to pull the wool over their eyes with a bogus claim. But unfortunately, As per the words of the tribunal member, unfortunately, tenants are going unprepared and they're losing out.
Absolutely. And just want to pick up one other thing. You mentioned removers, right? Because people quite often will employ removers to help move stuff in. They are often a bit careless, right? And they will often do damage. And they aren't always up front when they do the damage. So once again, it's worth just doing a little bit of a wheel around after they've been there or while they're there to make sure that you've checked that they haven't done anything to break anything they've brought or to damage floors or walls or doors as they've shifted stuff around, because it's always much harder to prove it after the fact.
Oh, that's great. So, look, hopefully, because of the nature of the cost of things and in labour and in goods, this is from the from the horse's mouth, from the tribunal senior tribunal member herself. So it's something that they're witnessing. They feel for it, but they're just following the rules and they're not moving into a second hearing or into what we call a formal hearing. They're trying to resolve things at the first instance because of the backlog of claims and matters in the tribunal. So they're trying to avoid they're trying to come to mediation on the day, and you don't have the support that tenants used to have before, when you were able to go there face to face and you'd get the support, in-house support from third parties, independent third parties there. So look, that's just something for our viewers to keep in mind, and also to share with their family and friends.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. From one horse's mouth to another horse's mouth. So always useful to get those. Oh, he's gone. Oh, there we go. There you go. Now, which one's that?
She was going for the tequila. This is Evan.
Okay. Evan's
Dusty's on having a bit of a nap, but she saw the bottle of tequila and 43 on the table, so she was going for it.
Very good. Well, Edwin, thanks very much for your time today. Great, as always, to catch up. Some very important insights there. And we'll do it all again next week.
Definitely.
See ya. Bye-bye.